coming to you live from the Vatican. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always is the secret lizard person who controls the papacy. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 41, Hands!
Holy crap, it is good to be back on the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we are the guys that do the podcast, and we're glad to have you here, our dear readers.
Listeners.
Welcome.
Listeners. They're listeners.
They
listen.
That doesn't sound right.
With their ears.
That doesn't sound right to me.
Okay.
Fair enough. But we're glad to have you back because this week we have an exciting topic for you. This past weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Johannes and I were at an event called Protospiel, which is a game design conference, which happened to occur relatively near to where both of us live, that we attended. There were a big pile of game designers there, and once they had been shoveled out of pile form and were able to lay out their prototypes on various tables in the convention center. They were then able to playtest one another's games, offer feedback, encouragement, suggestions for improvement, and all of that sort of stuff, and just general camaraderie and good times. So we took Big Man there with us. We only took the one game this year, hoping to bring some more next time.
Yep.
And we had just a blast. Like, it was arguably the most fun that we've had in a while, I think.
I think so.
I had a tremendous amount of fun. What struck me about the whole weekend, really,
was a big truck.
Yeah, I got hit by a truck, and I am currently podcasting through a straw because I can't swallow solid podcasts at the moment. But no, what struck me was that it was just this. I would describe it as relentlessly exhausting and exhilarating and just positive about games and game design. It was like everybody there was like, I like board and card games, and I want to make awesome board and card games, and I want to make the board and card game I'm playing with you right now awesome. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a lot of chest bumping going on, but I felt like there was a lot of chest bumping going on.
Do you mean chest thumping?
What is...
I feel like chest bumping is where, like, in celebration, you bump your chests together.
No, that's what I meant. Like, everybody was so pumped about what they were doing. Oh. Like, it's like, boom! Yeah, like... Like they would do if we were the sort of people
who chest
bumped.
I thought you meant chest beating like a gorilla does to show dominance.
No, I didn't feel like there was any dominance being shown.
I know, and that's what you were saying.
No,
but
no,
then
no.
You said, I don't feel like there was any chest bumping going on.
No, there was chest bumping, but not thumping. Whatever, it was really cool. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Here. I'm just excited about Protospiel. Can't you let me have this?
No.
Fair enough.
No.
We had a really good time over the 3 days and the probably, what was it be, combined, what would that be? Like 40 some odd hours.
You were there more than I was because I had to work Sunday morning.
Right.
But yeah, I was there. I think what we said it was 16 and a half on Friday, another 15 or so on Saturday.
And then another.
And then I was there for 5 on Sunday.
Yeah, and I was there. So 9. I was there for 9 on Sunday probably then.
It was a lot of hours.
It was a lot. But it was just fantastic. So we thought we would start out today's podcast. We'd start out the first half of the episode talking a little bit about stuff from Protospiel, games that we really enjoyed, people we met who we found awesome, and feedback that we got on our game, just generally talking about Protospiel.
I hope we're not doing something we're not allowed to in mentioning other people's prototypes and things we liked about them. Like, I guess they brought them to
an
conference
event
open to the public. So probably it's okay. We'll try not to give anything away.
Let's not dig too far into the rules,
yeah,
but
right.
Focus on, you know, this guy brought a game that we liked a lot and it was rad and we enjoyed it.
So if you're one of the designers and we'd say something about your game that you prefer we hadn't, before you, you know, go the legal route and send us a cease and desist letter, maybe just hit up the comments or send us an email.
Yeah, we'll give you that contact info momentarily here. I guess aside from Big Man itself, our game that we brought, what was your highlight of the show that you found rad?
It's really hard to pick one. I liked so much about so many different ones.
You probably want to talk about the one that let you be a dinosaur.
Yeah, I think I have to.
I think you're contractually obligated to.
There was a game there called Allosaurus. I saw it on the first day. I walked past it. I think I was just heading over to the other side of the room to refill my water bottle or something. And I walked back to our table and I go, Tom, there is a game called Allosaurus. We have to play it. I don't care if it's bad. We have to play it.
And it turned out it was pretty solid.
It's pretty solid.
We thoroughly enjoyed our time as Allosauri, moving about the jungles of prehistoric Earth, mm-hmm. devouring other dinosaurs and generally behaving as you would expect the alpha predator to behave.
Yeah.
That was a cool one, too, because that designer's Seth, I think.
Seth Allison.
Seth Allison,
you can
yeah.
find him. And he did not have Twitter until I bugged him about it. But he's on Twitter now. He followed us. It's Seth Allison Dev.
Yeah. He did a cool thing. He had a big poster board set up at his table with a lot of a description of the game and some rules, references on it that could easily be referenced. Obviously wouldn't be part of the game on publication, but did a great job of attracting
attention
to it.
It was a really good presentation, yeah.
It was smart. We didn't have that because we are, what's the opposite of smart?
Morons.
We're morons. Yeah. The other thing we didn't have at the game design conference that we went to explicitly for the purpose of meeting other game designers and connecting and entering the industry and, you know, getting our game out there were business cards. That was the thing we didn't have, which a lot of people did.
Yeah. Or like, yep. Social graces at all.
You know, I thought we did pretty good.
We fit in better in a group of other game designers than we do in most other
regular
people.
Society,
yeah,
like
normal
like
humans.
I felt like you were pretty nice to people in general. Like, I don't think you hurt anyone's feelings, really. I wouldn't say.
At least not intentionally.
Not intentionally, sure. And I kept all of my fluids on the inside. There was no vomiting, no weeping, no anything with urine. It was just, you know, I functioned like people have done.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yep.
Yeah, it was good. So anyway, we got to play that. That was probably one of your highlights, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
The Allosaurus game. So check that out. Seth's a cool guy.
He played our game, gave us some good feedback.
Yep.
His wife played our game, who apparently isn't all that into games. So thanks for suffering through that, Seth's wife, whose name escapes me.
Yeah, she seemed to have a pretty good time.
Yeah, she seemed to. What about you?
I think probably just from a raw spectacle perspective of what I got to play was, I'm forgetting what the actual title of the game was, but Gary Paquette.
Is that the spaceship game?
That's the spaceship game, yeah. He had this sweet prototype, which was very eye-grabbing, where it was a three-level board. It looked like the 3D chess from Star Trek, except mm-hmm. everything was stacked right up on top of each other, and you could move your ships around in full 3D. He had a cool card command system that he was iterating a bunch over the weekend and working on. And you could navigate and roll and pitch and yaw and all of that. He didn't use the word yaw.
Nope.
But why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's I wondered yaw. The same thing as he was making up those cards. I was like, you should work yaw.
I think it actually came up in the playtest I was in, but don't remember what the explanation of that decision was. It was probably that yaw is not as common a word as you and I think it is.
I'm sure it's not. But that's why I would have chosen it.
But at any rate, it was really cool. And I hope I can buy it someday because it was a lot of fun.
I didn't get to play it, and I would call that a highlight of my weekend was just seeing it. He set it up behind our table on the first day when we were running our first playtest of Big Man, and I was deeply distracted by it. I couldn't take my eyes off it. He 3D printed his own, modeled and printed his own little game pieces and hand-painted them, and it looked really good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So good on you for that, Gary. I hope that comes together
so that we can purchase it.
Also, I don't actually know that I ever heard your first name said out loud, so it might be Jerry. I don't know. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that.
Is it with an A or an E?
Was it Gerry, if
That's
I remember?
Jerry.
Right? That's Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. I'm wrong.
I also really liked Timely Manor.
Okay, do I have to tell the story?
You can tell the story.
About my shame with Timely Manor.
Oh yes, that story you are welcome to tell.
Yeah. So Timely Manor is timely, like the word timely, and then M-A-N-O-R as in manor, like the large house.
Yeah, it's got a picture of a mansion on the front.
And we played it Friday night pretty late, really.
Yeah.
In the day. And then I went home and I slept, and then the next morning I'm driving to the event again, and I think to myself, man, that Timely Manor game was, oh, I get it now. Manor, M-A-N-N-E-R, like in a timely manner. Oh, I get that. That's really clever. I was really tired last night.
Yeah, so that at once makes me feel better and worse about how the game actually went play-wise, because it's a very clever mechanic, and without giving away too much, I guess, a lot of it has to do with you have a hand of 10 cards, and each of them has a picture of a desk on it and mm-hmm. a bunch of various objects on the desk, and they change, and so part of the mechanic of the game is you have to find like a clock and put it in order between two times. So like the card mm-hmm. setting up the thing would be like, here's an this analog clock, and there might be more than one analog clock, goes between, you know, you have to lay out in order the five cards that have this card mm-hmm. faces between like 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. Really absurdly difficult, some of them, for me and the other guy who was playing. But Tom just like some kind of, I'll be nice and say robot, rather than other things that I could compare you to, just like every single time killed us on the timing. So we're sitting there feeling like we're morons. We can't play this friggin' game. Tom's just destroying us. But then he pretty much just went just full moron.
Yeah,
on
just
the,
complete moron on the name. I think at that point in the night, I had sort of hit my Balmer peak of gameplay where I couldn't understand like regular concepts, but it was just like, okay, yeah, this is the game I'm playing. I have to do the thing. That's what it happens. Just go. Lizard brain part. Do board game card. Ugh.
So that's a game by Jonathan Chaffer, who was also very cool and very helpful. I don't think we ever got a chance to run our game for him, did we?
No, I don't think he ever made it over to our table, unfortunately.
Gave us a lot of great input. You can follow him on Twitter, but he hasn't posted anything since 2012. But if you want to look at what he posted in 2012, he's at Uncle John Bob. That's John with no H.
That's a good Twitter handle.
I liked it.
I should probably use Twitter sometime, shouldn't I?
Sometimes,
probably.
Yeah.
Okay. My Twitter handle is Mongrel Idiot, though, so maybe that's not the best.
I enjoy it because every time I call you out in a tweet from the Mildly Alarming Twitter account, I get to call you Mongrel Idiot.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Let's see, what else was good?
There's a lot of good stuff.
Like, that's the hard part here, is that there was so much good stuff that happened there. Like, one of the things that I was worried about going into it, this was our first event, was whether or not the quality of our prototype would be appropriate for the show. Like, I didn't want to go in with some, like, bull pucky piece of junk that we'd, you know, written on scraps of notebook paper, and, you know, we'd drawn the icons on with our blood or whatever. And then everybody else had these, you know, great, this really high quality professional grade stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if everybody else was rolling up with their garbage stuff on torn sheets of butcher paper or just, you know, written on their own arms and crap with a pen, I didn't want to show up, you know, having spent a crap load of money and time putting into their really great prototype. But we were really, I would say we were about right.
I'd say we were middle of the pack.
Yeah. There were some that had more to it, mainly because the people who made them had what's the word I want here?
Talent.
Talent at art.
Yeah.
And making pictures, which what we have the opposite of that.
Yep.
Between the two of us collectively, so individually it's worse somehow. So those were cool to see. Like, you're like, wow, that's really good.
Well, part of what we found out over the course of the weekend, seeing some people who had some really good prototypes, were that, first of all, some people are just incredibly gifted naturally. Like, one of the games we played, this guy, Oliver?
Oliver, yeah. I forget Ollie's last name, and I don't know if he's okay with me calling him Ollie.
I wouldn't be if my name were Oliver.
I'm sorry, Oliver.
his game was gorgeous.
It was,
and the art was very well thought out, and the icons were really good. And the gameplay, I don't want to say that the gameplay was secondary, but mm-hmm. like his art was ready to go to print.
Right.
And his game was still at a, like, I'm open to any suggestions. Like, I, you know, this is a first draft. Stuff that doesn't work, doesn't work. Please tell me how to change it. Mm-hmm. And it looked nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then there were some people who had like no images on their cards at all. Or hand-drawn stuff. But mm-hmm. what we learned was that a lot of people, because for a prototype, you're never going to be selling it this way. Even if you publish it yourself, you're going to be paying an artist or doing the art yourself when you get there. And if you publish it through a publisher, they're probably going to have their own person do the art.
Right, right.
So unless yours is already amazing somehow, you're pretty much, it's not worth the effort, but you still want your prototype to look good for stuff like ProtoSpiel and to be, you know, interactive and playable. So people just go, like one of the guys, Michael Brandel, he made Rar the card game, which is actually out through Ape Games that you should buy. We played Rar the dice game that he's working on, and a chariot racing game, which sounded like the least interesting style of board game ever, and it turned out to be really good. He uses only public domain images, even in his prototype, so it's all above board. But he has images and icons and artwork and whatever he needs, and he managed to make it pretty thematic, so it looked right. The chariots and the texture of the track and the chariot racing game all looked pretty good together. The iconography and the like pictures of cityscapes and army tanks and whatever he had in Rar the card or the Rar the dice game also worked together.
Right.
And then there were other people who were like, just make it look good. Just go to DeviantArt and find pictures that look good for your theme and take them. It's a prototype.
Because you're not selling it. You're not. The artist might get grumpy if they knew, but they'll never know. Yeah, that's about what that boiled down to.
Which I thought was interesting. I would never do that. Still, I don't think. Even though now I know people are doing it, I might be a little more comfortable.
Right.
I probably would stick to the public domain or Creative Commons or whatever.
Right. Well, too, Big Man didn't lend itself as much.
Yeah,
to that kind of thing as other games might. But still, it's good to know for the future.
Yeah.
That nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cared. Johannes mentioned the chariot racing game. That's funny because every time we have a lull in our creative process, like we're just sitting there trying to come up with an idea and it falls silent, I'll chime in with, well, what if we made a car racing game?
And then I stab him.
Yeah, and I have 18 stab wounds now at this point, and I've lost 11 pints of blood. Since ProtoSpiel, actually,
yeah, yep.
To those stab wounds, so I say it a lot. And so when Michael busted out the chariot racing game, I was like, yes, I am vindicated. And I looked over at Johannes because I thought I would just see like blood bubbling out of his tear ducts. But he took it pretty well, and we played it, and actually it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
I really liked it.
I took an approach at ProtoSpiel because I know what sort of games I like and don't like. I know what sort of things in life I like and don't like. I'm sure those of you who have listened to more than one episode of the podcast have figured that out pretty quickly. But I'm capable of putting those differences aside to either help someone out, give feedback, or try something new. So I just brought an attitude to ProtoSpiel of, I will try it. I enjoy board games. I will try to enjoy a board game.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out pretty well for me, I think. I didn't play anything this weekend that I was like, I hated that and I wish I hadn't done it.
Mm-hmm. I did more or less the same thing. I was like, yeah. I just want to play all of the board games as much as I can.
So I want to just shout out a few people who might never hear this, but Joe Hoskins gave us some really good input on our first playthrough. He had a prototype or two there. I didn't get to play
We kept missing connections with him, unfortunately.
Josh Sprung had a couple really good games there. Those both stood out to me. One of them was that Siege Among Thieves sort of it's cooperative until it's not. You know, if you all are alive at the end, it's a co-op victory, but if any one person's like main character dies, it turns into a free-for-all.
Yeah, it had some interesting things going on with exactly how much do I want to help you versus...
Yeah,
yeah, it was pretty
cool, and then he had a pirate game that he's working on that was pretty interesting. He knows what's wrong with it and what the changes it need to make. I think he's got a pretty good handle on it, but we enjoyed what we played of it.
He also has the kind of mustache that... Were we playing Age of Sigmar like we discussed last week, would get him just hella bonuses.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I don't want to play that game against him because he would whoop me left, right, and center.
He's not on Twitter. I think he's on Board Game Geek. Michael Brandel's also on Board Game Geek. But he was very helpful. Wanted to say thanks to him, and his games looked good. He had loads of, as someone a little closer both to our age and our... Not, I don't want to say level of experience, but amount of time in it.
Uh-huh.
We've been doing this for a little over 2 years. He'd been doing it, I think he said, a little over four.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very helpful, just telling us sort of the sort of etiquette things that you otherwise just have to try to pick up as you go.
For example, I didn't know until he brought it up, that it's not acceptable to just walk up to a game publisher and just start petting them to get their attention toward your game.
Yeah.
Yep. I thought that was fine, and it turns out that's a faux pas.
He mentioned the pants on at all times at Proto Spiel rule, which Tom was not aware of.
Yeah, I didn't. Like, that seems unreasonable to me, but you know,
whatever. I was aware of it, but aggressively anti.
So apologies to the guy that I pet at that one point, and apologies to everybody who had to see the two of us pantsless. We feel real bad about that.
And then the guys from Accidental Cyclops, Michael and Ward. Accidental Cyclops is at Fun With One Eye on Twitter. They had a couple game prototypes. We got to play one of them that was pretty light and dice gamey, and we enjoyed ourselves. But they were also hugely helpful. Lots of good feedback. Yeah, so thanks, guys.
Yep, and also your hats were pretty sweet.
They were. They have logo. Check them out. Even if you don't use Twitter, just find them. Look at their website. Look at their Twitter. You see their logo for Accidental Cyclops. It looks pretty good. Pretty entertaining.
You'll be like, I get what you did there. It's pretty sweet. So, anything else from the show that you think is worth bringing up on the first half of the show here?
You wanted to talk about feedback we got?
So, I guess, you know, we went in having playtested Big Man in our little small group for about 2 years. How much do you think it improved over the weekend, and how much do we have to work with now? What stood out to you as the improvement of the show for Big Man? For our game, Big Man is the game that we're making.
Oh, that's a good. Before I forget, since we're just dropping names real quick, other people who were helpful deserve a shout out. Who were great? Uva, Gunter, David, Sylvan, other Josh.
Yeah, we didn't take good notes.
Nope.
So yeah, that's Uva and Gunter from Academy Games. Were very helpful. Offered us a lot of fantastic feedback. David, I think his last name was Spitzer.
That sounds right.
Yeah, we played a game of his called Invisible Hands about conspiracy theories taking over the world, which was a lot of fun.
Yep.
I was surprised to see Johannes enjoy a strategy game as much as he did that one, so that was kind of cool. Sylvan, I'm sorry, Sylvan, I don't remember your last name from the show, but
I don't either.
I didn't get to try it, but I liked the look of the polar bear game. That was pretty cool, about climate change.
Apparently, from what we heard from Josh Sprung, his other game, Pangea, which also had dinosaurs, and I'm sad I didn't get to play, was pretty cool. He's doing a cool thing with educational games in a way that kept them interesting. His other game was about global warming, and I looked at it and I was like, there's no way this is good. This might be a mechanically sound game, but there's no way he didn't just shoehorn this theme onto it.
Right.
And it actually worked.
Like, the theme was, it was integral.
It was integral, and it made sense, and it was interesting, and you learned things while playing. So it was cool.
Excellent. And other Josh was there with Josh Sprung, I think. They were a team, and he playtested a couple of games with us and was generally a pleasant sort. So thank you all for a wonderful weekend and for all of the fantastic feedback that you provided.
If we missed you and you're offended, it's just because we're dumb and forgetful.
We are. I cannot emphasize how dumb we are. We are bad at life.
Yeah.
We should be ashamed. Anyway, we're going to put this on the internet for everybody to hear.
Yep. But you were saying feedback we got. I think the best feedback we got, I guess it remains to be seen as we actually make those changes in more than a scribbled in the rules book during the weekend kind of way, is probably the tweak to monsters.
Yeah, yes. So one of the big problems Big Man has had since its inception is getting monsters to play nice with the players. We've had them... figure out how often monsters get to go, more or less.
It hasn't even been a problem so much, in my mind, of the monsters not working on their own, but that they don't scale well at all to a different number of players. So if we got the monsters working just how I wanted in two-player, that meant they would be drastically overpowered when it got to a four-player game.
Right.
And if we made them work perfectly in four-player, that meant a two-player game was like, why are these monsters even here? I can just walk right through them.
Yeah. And so the suggestion we got that worked turned out to work pretty well, I think. I feel like we're going to want to playtest it a bunch, but it's in good... I'm optimistic about its trajectory at this point, was to color code the monsters according to the player whose turn they appeared on.
Mm-hmm.
That way they will activate only on that player's turn.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll activate one time per round without generating a separate monster phase or anything like that that you have to keep track of. So monsters will only activate if their color matches the current player's turn. And that's pretty good. That seemed to work okay the couple of times we tried it.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, thinking about it, I don't think anyone gave us that suggestion specifically. I think we came to that after several play tests, getting little snippets of different monster. Well, what if they only went once per round? What if they this? What if they that? And I think working with a couple of play testers, like kind of thinking out loud,
right,
we kind of hashed it out and hammered that together with them. I don't think any one person was ever like, you should do it this way, which is interesting. I'm not saying no one was as helpful as they could have been or that we're smart and came up with it on our own, but just the fact that over the course of time, enough feedback from enough different people from different backgrounds who like different kinds of games were able to all work together and make an alloy of this one game mechanic.
And that leads into kind of an interesting and useful thing about the weekend, too, was that it was really interesting to me to see what parts of the game really clicked for what groups of players.
Yeah.
Like, there were some players who immediately grasped, oh yeah, this is a game where I'm going to play a card with a monster next to another player to screw that guy over. That's how I screw the leader over, how I catch up, how I keep my opponents down. There were other players who got, okay, this is a dungeon crawler. I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to play this so I can find treasure really quick, you know? Like, and there were some who immediately grasped monster mechanics. There were some for whom that was deeply confusing.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see how that all interplayed with one another and what parts made sense to what kinds of players.
Yeah. And it was also interesting to see that difficulty was another thing. Like, trying to scale the difficulty of monsters or of what a given action could do to a player. Like, cause them to be, recaptured instead of killed, because except for in a few situations, your big man never actually dies. You just lose some swag and start over from the beginning. There was a huge discrepancy, I felt, or not even a discrepancy, a huge range of opinion on what was too harsh. And I think I tend to lean toward a little harsher, like easier to get killed and have to start over, because I think that's the main element of challenge in the game.
Right.
And some people were like, yeah, of course, that makes perfect sense. You would die there. Why wouldn't you? And other people were like, no, you die just for that? I don't want to lose half my stuff. And so there's always the element of, like, they're playing the game. They're right in the middle of it. Of course they don't want to die right there.
Yeah.
Or of course they want the other guy to die right there, because it's going to put them ahead or it's going to knock them behind, and that sucks. But also, just like, what is too hard? And what they're looking for out of the game. Like, some people were like, yes, challenge, that's good, that makes sense. And others were like, yeah, but player enjoyment. If it's too easy to die, is that too harsh? And then to the point of not being fun anymore?
Right, right.
I thought that was interesting.
Very, and you know, some players would more or less play their own game, looking for treasure and fighting monsters and whatnot, and others would be like, no, I'm going to actively mess with you.
That was my favorite.
I'm going to spend my entire game making your entire game miserable. And the other player would be like, yeah, that's how you play games with me.
Yeah.
Person that I know.
Two of the playtests that I enjoyed running and participating in the most were a father and son who are both into board games, who are playing together.
That was fun.
And just, like, watching them go at one another, but also like having fun. You know, this is a game, we're playing a game together. They really got it. And then a couple of guys who were had obviously been longtime friends, kind of like me and Tom, and interacted in a very similar way of like, yeah, screw you, I'm gonna drop a monster on you, just you've done nothing to me, I just want to make your life worse.
Right I want to see you fail.
Yeah, and then also, like, you know, jabs and barbs at one another in conversation totally outside of the game. Just a very, like, friendly but competitive. That was really fun to watch. That's exactly how I like to see the game played.
And it fits very well with the way the game works and the mechanics. So it was cool to see it. It was cool to see it work, and it was also cool to see it not work and kind of try to find those spots where it's not quite polished yet.
I think where we're going with this is leading pretty well into what we're doing for the second segment. So you want to take a break for the word from our sponsors?
Yeah, the sponsor this week is awful. Like, where did we find that guy?
You know, I just get the ones that they send me, and we get the pretend podcast dollars for those ad spots.
I guess. Yeah, that's how we keep the pretend podcast lights on.
So before we do that, let's let them know how they can get in contact with us if you want to tell us anything, like you're mad that we forgot to give you a shout out even though you spent the entire weekend with us at Protospiel.
We love you so much.
When we're terribly sorry. You can hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you can go to www.mildlyalarming.com and leave a comment in the comment section.
Or you can carve a litany of your hatred for us into a crossbow bolt, fire it into the sky at the dark of the moon, and it will find our blackened and shriveled hearts.
I'm covered in scars all across my chest and the top of my head from those crossbow bolts.
It hurts so very badly.
But it is effective.
We get the message.
So we'll be right back after this word from our horrible, horrible sponsor.
So bad.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought
brought to you by Sprinkles the Clown. Listen, I spent my last $20 to get this 30-second spot. Please, for the love of God, hire me. I haven't had any work in 6 months. My last gig was at an office party, and it turned out that it was just a prank on their boss. She's scared of clowns. Everyone's scared of clowns now.
I mean, well, they are kind of...
Damn you, Stephen King!
I think we're about out of time.
Well, I do balloon animals, goofy voices, crazy characters. I got one of those little flowers that squirts water.
And that's...
Only 1 in 6 clowns is murderous. Your odds aren't actually that bad.
Sprinkles the Clown. Available for weddings, birthdays, office parties, you know, clown stuff. Somebody hire him. It's looking pretty grim over here.
Button your shoes up and welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom.
And I'm Johannes. What kind of person has shoes with buttons? What kind of shoes have buttons?
You don't have buttons on your shoes?
I do not.
You're missing out, man.
You do?
Yeah. Big old buttons.
What kind of buttons?
They're just buttons, like you would have on your shirt, but on your shoe instead.
That's weird.
Yeah, you just button. What? You don't have that?
You're sure you're wearing shoes on your feet?
Pretty sure I'm wearing shoes on my feet.
Not like a shirt or boxer shorts.
What kind of boxer shorts have buttons? Those all have snaps.
I've never had a pair of boxer shorts with snaps.
You've never had a pair of boxer shorts with snaps?
That sounds way better. Buttons are really hard to open through a fly in your jeans.
Come to think of it, I don't think I've ever had a pair of boxer shorts with buttons.
I usually just leave them unbuttoned. Buttons are the worst.
They don't even... Mine don't even have buttons. It's just a flap there.
They just got one button on the fly. It's the worst.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. Mine don't have that.
It's a bad plan.
You can just go and do it. You're right there.
It just opens right up.
Yeah, you don't need any way of closing that. It can just stay... You can rely on just the shape of the short.
Yeah, that's a better design, I feel.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So welcome back to the Boxer Shorts Show with Tom and Johannes.
It's good to have you here, if you're still here after what
They're
just
gone.
Happened. They left. Nobody would stick around for our in-depth discussion of how one closes a pair of boxers. I'm glad there aren't boxers with zippers, by the way.
Oh, man.
That's bad.
Boxers, the only reason I even bother to wear boxers is to protect me from the zipper. I want another layer there before any zippering action happens.
That's fair. I feel like if you had two zippers, like, you would risk them getting, like, entangled, like the teeth meshed, and then that's bad. Like, how would you ever get out of those?
The fact that someone decided that an apparatus that involves teeth should be in that general vicinity
in the
first place.
The crotch. He's talking about the crotch.
The wangular region. That person should have reconsidered. And the people who were like, yes, that seems like a good idea.
Would you prefer we go back to olden days and use, like, laces on our breeches?
That could be interesting. I don't know. If it's still buttoned at the top, doesn't seem like that much more work.
Or, like, the pants, they're just all the way around. Like, they don't have a front... like gap there, like a fly. It's just all the way around, and you just have to tighten your belt until they stay up.
I see what you're talking about. It's like, if they just go all the way around and, like, there's no legs, that's not pants anymore. That's like a skirt.
That's a kilt. Dude, I'm not gonna lie. A couple of weeks ago, I was out of clean laundry, and so all morning while I waited for, like, clean pants to get there, I just wore a towel, like a kilt, and it was awesome, and I would wear a kilt if it was business casual.
Yeah.
Like, it was way better than pants. I'm not even gonna lie to you guys.
Yeah, okay.
Do we have a topic in the second half?
Well, hold on now. We're talking about pants and flies. We're moving into the future. What about, like, an electromagnetic seam, you know, that you can turn off and then your fly opens, but when you turn it back on again, it just snaps shut?
I mean,
you could use regular magnets, but they might not have, you know, the necessary...
Sure. I would be nervous that the power source for the electromagnet would run out on me when I was, like, you know, standing in line at the grocery store and all of a sudden that my pants are just falling open.
Yeah.
Unfurling. Or you know, as you might say.
If they go through the wash a few too many times and wires start to get frayed exactly. and short, and then you're zapping yourself in your downstairs region.
Yeah, your downstairs giggle place. Yeah, that's not good.
Well, I guess this is why we aren't pants designers.
That's true. We are game designers, and we went to Protospiel last weekend, and true. We're happy about that.
Yep.
So welcome back to the Mildly Alarming
Podcast. We plan to go back this weekend, even though no one's going to be there.
Yeah, we're just going to break.
We're just going to wistfully sit in the park. Yeah, we're going to break in.
Break into what into the building. Yeah.
Whatever conference is going on in there, we're just going to be like, you guys can keep doing what you're doing, but we're playing board games in this corner, and you're dealing with it.
Yep, and that's just what's happening. And no, officer, I am not drunk. He is, though.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely.
Yep.
So our second segment today is called Cake Soup.
We've been sitting on this, actually, for like a month.
It's more than a month. It's at least since February.
I don't think it's that long. But I saw this on Twitter. Daniel Solis, who we've mentioned before on the podcast, posted this on Twitter. He's another game designer.
And our best internet friend.
Who probably is no longer even aware that we exist.
That's fair.
I think I tweeted at him once or twice. Like right when we started.
Tweet him again after this episode.
Yeah, be like, hey, listen to our podcast.
We love you. We're in your house.
The podcast is coming from inside the house.
Could we have some chips and a little bit of salsa, please? We're so hungry.
And he wrote an article called This Soup is an Awful Cake, 5 Tips for Taking Playtest Feedback. And I think they also talked about it on the Game Design Roundtable podcast, and all of this links to this article, which contains links to the podcast, will be in our show notes.
Yay!
But we wanted to save it until after Protospiel when we knew we were going to spend a weekend seeing if we were actually even capable of taking advice.
Yeah, you may have picked up on the show over the over the course of time here.
Do no such thing.
Fair enough. That we are perhaps not the most level-headed and calm of men.
Hey, you take that back. I am calm and I am level-headed.
I will see you in hell before I take that back.
Fair enough.
All right, cool. And so,
see how quickly we resolved that conflict?
Conflict resolution. But we, you know, feedback can be tough to take. I can't speak for Johannes, but I spent 6 years in a creative writing program, more or less workshopping my stories constantly. So there would be a classroom full of people all talking about why my story was awful all at once. And it wasn't really that bad, but you know, they're all saying what didn't work, what did work, that kind of thing. And it's kind of hard to sit there for 45 minutes or a half hour or however long it was listening to people dissect your work.
Mm-hmm.
And the same was true we suspect it would be true at Protospiel, where you just kind of have to be there while people are like, well, this didn't work in your game and this did work and this art sucks and this, that, and the other.
Well, we've run playtests of our game outside of Protospiel before, with non-game designers, but people with experience with board games in large part,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them have a lot of ideas. And I don't know about you, I had a hard time taking a lot of people's feedback when we just ran it for, you know, a couple of friends who mm-hmm. happen to be into board games. They'd be like, "Well, what do you know?"
Right. Well, it's a question of, is that actually a good piece of feedback, or is that just one blip on one end of the spectrum? And if we were to run, you know, 100 play tests, we'd find that it was an outlier, you know?
Right.
And so there's a sense where Protospiel was incredibly valuable in that it gave us raw volume of feedback. We could see where the patterns were, where the things that people were consistently an issue for players were.
Yeah.
Which is huge. If you're running the same play test with the same group of people over and over again, you're just not going to get that.
Though on the flip side, a problem that Protospiel never really overcomes is the fact that every play is a first play for
true.
Most of the players.
True.
So a lot of things that stem from, I just don't really have my head all the way around the game yet.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn to figure out what those are and throw them out. So it's not perfect either way.
Right.
But you're
right.
The just sheer volume, a lot more data points means a lot more data. This is useless, completely useless thing I just said.
Yeah, definitely. But to back up to the phrase, this soup is a terrible cake, or cake is a terrible soup.
This soup is an awful cake.
Soup is an awful cake. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, of what that means is that if you have a bowl of soup and you come to it and apply the criteria of what makes for a very good cake to it, you say, you'll find there's no frosting. It's way too moist.
Yeah.
When you bite it, there's
not a lot to chew.
There's not much to chew there. It dribbles a lot more. It's a lot more of a liquid than what you might call a solid.
Yeah.
Generally, it's probably flavored like cheddar and broccoli, which if you hand me a cheddar and broccoli cake, that is not a cake I'm happy about.
I would eat a cheddar and broccoli cake.
I would try it.
Like, that doesn't sound terrible, as long as it wasn't like a chocolate frosted cheddar and broccoli cake.
Like,
if it's all out cheddar and broccoli.
Like, where's the broccoli?
I don't know that I'd call it a cake anymore, is the thing.
It's more of a loaf.
Yeah.
Yeah. A cheddar broccoli loaf.
That sounds okay.
Okay, I'd try that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not a cake.
Right.
Yeah. So if you...
Nor is it a soup.
Nor is it... Oh, my God. but the point is, if you critique a thing according to a set of criteria that it was never intended to meet, you're going to run into problems. If you critique a fantasy fiction novel according to the norms of Victorian realism...
You're going to have a bad time.
It's just not going to make any sense. You're applying a template or a set of standards that aren't appropriate for what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't something we ran into too much, I felt like, at Protosphere. I felt like most everybody we worked with was like, okay, lightweight, dungeon crawler, cool. I get that. We're going to do it. We're going to talk about it in those terms.
And most people were aware of what they liked. And I think I like to think we did a good job of this playing other people's games too. Being aware that, yeah, okay, this is a lightweight dungeon crawler. I get what that is. That's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like I need to tell you to change it to be a different thing,
mm-hmm.
just because that's not what I would choose first. Mm-hmm. So we had quite a few people come who are like, I'm really, I'm more into Euro games. I'm more into war games and whatever. This is not that. I don't feel a need to tell you to make it into a war game because it's clearly not that.
Right. Or a Euro or anything like that. Yeah. No, I definitely never felt like they were caking our soup.
Right. That sounds gross.
Yeah, it's worse than I intended.
It seems like a waste of both.
Yeah, yeah. I want to have my soup, and then I want to wait a half hour, and then I want to have my cake.
Yeah.
I don't want to have dinner in between. I just want the soup and the cake.
The soup's not then just dinner?
No, the soup isn't dinner.
But you didn't have dinner.
Right. There's no dinner. I'm just having soup and cake.
So is the soup now not just dinner?
No. There's no dinner. No dinner happens.
But you had soup.
Yeah, but I had soup. Soup isn't dinner. Soup is soup.
But then you didn't have dinner.
Right. There's an empty space. It's a set with nothing in it.
Right. But that makes the soup dinner.
No, it doesn't. Because
it's the meal that you had
the
day.
No, because then, by that definition, no dinner I have most days is actually dinner. It's lunch.
I agree with that.
Because it's the second meal that I have.
I'm fine with that definition.
And I don't have breakfast until 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So you're positing a world where breakfast is whatever you eat. Order.
I think by merit of the word breakfast, meaning break fast, breakfast you could easily argue is the first thing you eat of the day.
Well, but hold on, though. Because I break my fast in the morning with a cup of coffee at home before I go to work. So that fast is broken.
It depends on... That's a liquid fast. Now it gets a little more... Generally, fast refers to solid food.
Solid foods. Okay, so if I were to eat
You could make an argument for milk.
I could make an argument for milk is clearly a liquid.
Yeah, but I'm not saying I'm making one. I'm saying you could.
How could you make that argument?
Because it's a high in fat and protein and content. It could conceivably be a meal.
So it's not solids. It's the content of the food.
Yeah, but I think, right, we're really getting into semantics now. That's why all I said was you could make an argument, not let me make an argument. God, move on, Tom.
We are cake souping the hell out of this business.
Actually, yeah, that was completely unintentional.
At any rate, my point is I usually don't have dinner until like midnight then, by this definition.
Yeah, that's about how my day goes.
Yeah, I usually, yeah.
Okay, cool. Glad we had this discussion.
Yeah, it's a good discussion of food in our board game podcast. I guess what I would say for this segment is to move away from Protospiel, the specific instance we had this past week, and to talk about more feedback generally. And I think it was a good example of good feedback giving where you consider good feedback giving and good reviewing in general, where you think, what was this thing that I'm reviewing or talking about or giving feedback on trying to do, and how well did it do that? that might not be my jam. It might not be what I'm into. It might not be where I would go with it, but how well did it accomplish that? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to, it's no good comparing something to something that it never tried to be.
Yeah.
At the same time though, there is a limit to that though. And let me tell an illustrative story about that. Illustrative. Am I fine there?
I don't know. I could see illustrative and illustrative either way.
Are you sure it's not pronounced sepulcher?
It's a freaking hammer.
Okay, cool.
I guess we have to do that now when that happens.
Probably, whatever. Stocks or a pillory. I remember one
day Gabe will sue us. And Lorne Michaels are all going to show up at once and be like, cut it out, you guys.
You're not as funny as we are.
And we'll be like, oh my God, you're in our house. And then they'll leave. And we'll be like, oh my God, they left.
To collect their hair quickly. But the example I want to bring up is a particular creative writing class I took where there was one student who had written this story and we had this feedback on it. But before we gave it, before we did the review in the class, she pointed out that her goal was to write this to then give as like a gift to family members. So it was very inside baseball.
Sure.
To her in-group family members.
Right.
And we're all sitting there thinking, how do we critique this? You know, do we say, well, this didn't make any sense to me, but it'll probably make any sense because that's your Uncle Steve and everybody yeah. will get the reference. So there is a point where they have made a soup that is so far from cake that it's like gravel. And you're like, well, I'm critiquing this as cake, but it's not even food. So you have a problem there. I guess is how I would put
it.
Did,
did she have a problem, though? Or did she just... Well, was it just a problem for you trying to critique
well,
it?
Well, I mean, it was a problem for us trying to critique it, but it was also a problem of bringing it to the context it was in.
Sure, but... Okay, in the context of a class, you kind of just... You bring what you have to bring, though. You know? I could understand. I would not have brought that to Protospiel. You know? I wouldn't have brought a game that I designed for my younger siblings who will only understand it because they have a made-up twin mm-hmm. language and whatever other weird thing I included to a game conference like Protospiel and ask people to give me feedback, but then begin with, but by the way, I'm not making any changes to the twin language.
Sure, that example was harsher to her
sure.
than it should have been. I guess my general point is that there is a point where if you're bringing it out in public at all, it needs to hit certain points of intelligibility to a reasonable audience.
Sure. Well, the flip side of that is you guys needed to be ready to say, okay, with that in mind, here is the feedback we have for you. Mm-hmm. We're going to give it to you now, and you need to be ready to accept it at face value
yeah.
and decide whether or not it needs to be applied to your inside baseball family story.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. That context was particularly important.
Sure.
And that's more or less how that particular critique went mm-hmm. with that class. As I recall, it was a while back. So
yeah, that's pretty weird, though.
It was unusual. Yeah, it's not something you see a lot of. And I feel like it's not as applicable to Protospiel, but it kind of is in that, you know, if you bring a truly weird, like I feel like there are, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm too new to game design to really see it, but I feel like there are some general broad stroke standards going on, like way down basic stuff.
Well, so you got to take into account, especially with Protospiel, that different people have different goals for their games. Some people are trying to get them to a publisher
mm-hmm.
and interest a publisher, and they need to paint with pretty broad strokes. They need to work within an existing framework of games that publishers know people will like
mm-hmm.
so that they can take the risk to spend however much time and money workshopping, making art for, printing and producing and distributing a uh-huh. game. There are people who are going to try to self-publish, who maybe they're going to do a Kickstarter. They just need to know how to reach their audience. Or maybe they don't care. They just want to get it out there. They're going to do a print on demand. They just need to make it be good. In whatever way they've decided is good, mm-hmm. it's going out there and they'll sell it to who they sell to. So there's just, you kind of need to know what the end goal is before
sure.
you can make the input that you give, or if you're the person making the game, to get input that you accept useful. And I think most of the people at Protospiel were giving input on games with the assumption that you're trying to publish or get published and reach the greatest audience available.
That feels right.
And most people who were presenting a game were upfront, if they knew, upfront about saying either I'm self-publishing this and I'm starting a Kickstarter, or I'm pitching this to publishers and hoping it gets picked up. And that gives a fair amount of information to the playtester then on how they want to give their input and what input they want to give.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So I guess the soup cake business really boils down to you've got to know where that game is coming from, where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
In order to both give good feedback and to contextualize the feedback you receive.
Yeah.
So make sure you've got a clear idea of what you want to do.
And there's another thing to be said that you might receive feedback from two people who are coming from very different ends of the spectrum game-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And they might both be equally right, and it comes down to a matter of taste or intended audience.
Uh-huh.
So when we play-tested Seth's Allosaurus game, I had some pretty strong opinions on how certain things could work. And another guy who played-tested, and I come from a more, you know, I like my games, like I like a little bit of randomness. I don't mind that so much. I like plot-driven. I like story, you know, so Ameritrash, that's what you want to call it. This guy sitting next to me was clearly like an old-school roll fistfuls of dice and compare them to tables wargamer. And he was really pushing for getting rid of a lot of the stuff that cards did and just rolling against the table for those, adding more dice, more mm-hmm. dice. You need to do more things with the dice. And I don't think either of us was wrong. I just think it really depended on what you wanted to do as the designer with the game. And so mm-hmm. Seth now has that input from both of us, and he can do whatever he thinks is best with it. It's his game.
Right.
So it comes down to taste, and neither one is really right. We weren't saying... It was almost like one guy was saying, you know, Seth had made a sandwich, and one guy was saying this sandwich should be more soupy, and I was saying this sandwich should be more like a cake. And he could, you know, he could go make it a dessert sandwich, or he could make it a runny, wet sandwich. The analogy falls apart.
Well, no, but it's like... No, it works because like a French dip sandwich. That's like a soup sandwich.
Right, right.
There you go. You got the au jus going on.
Yep.
So running wet sandwiches up in the podcast today. It's a good podcast.
Running wet. Yeah.
Can I just say though that one man's Ameritrash is another man's Ameritreasure.
Thank you for that.
No problem, buddy.
Yeah. That's. I want to slap you a little bit, and I also want to shake your hand.
You want to just slap hands?
Okay.
A little bit.
There's microphones in the way. It's like a sad, pathetic sideways high five.
It's bad. I was watching the elbow, but it didn't help.
Well, it was sideways. I don't think it all falls apart.
Yeah, it's just a disaster. Really,
just the worst.
It's really just bad. Like the podcast. It's terrible.
Yeah, if this were a video podcast, you would all have like thrown up a little bit then, and then never watched
it again.
Was
real
you would
bad.
Just hit close that browser tab. We're done.
Terrible podcast.
So Daniel Solis has a lot more, and I'm sure a lot more eloquently put, information about how to take playtesting advice in his short article here, which will be in the show notes.
It would be hard to be less eloquent.
That is true. And I believe they go into it in greater depth on the Game Design Roundtable podcast, which is also linked in his article. So if you want to know things that are less stupid and more helpful, you can go, what are you even doing? Tom just I win.
It all went up my nose.
Tom just took a last swig of his G&T, started doing some weird jazz hands, arms wide open, I don't know what. And I called him on it, and then he squirted it out his nose. So I think this episode has been met with success by at least one metric.
I think it's coming out my tear ducts now. Whew! All right, what are we talking about?
I think we're ready to wrap it up.
We're wrapping it up. Okay, let's do that.
If Tom survives this episode, we'll see you next week. So you can you can hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or in the comment section where you've left us a 5-star review because you like us so much, despite everything you've heard today, on iTunes or Stitcher.
Or if you drink your beverage way too fast and start choking, I will appear behind you and perform the Heimlich maneuver and then whisper your own comment into your ear.
That's horrifying.
I know, right?
See you next week on the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
Have a lovely day.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Tom and Johannes. Tom and Johannes, they literally have nothing better to do.